We open our novel September 5th, 2017, 12:22 a.m. Mateo Torres is talking. Deathcast is calling with a warning of a lifetime. I'm going to die today. Forget that. Warning is too strong a word, since warning suggests something can be avoided, like a car honking at someone who's crossing the street when it isn't their light, giving them the chance to step back. This is more of a heads up. The alert, a distinctive and endless gong, like a church bell one block away, is blasting from my phone on the other side of the room. I'm freaking out already, 100 thoughts immediately drowning out everything around me. I bet this chaos is what a first-time skydiver feels as she's plummeting out of a plane, or a pianist playing his first concert. Not that I will ever know for sure. It's crazy. 1 minute ago, I was reading yesterday's blog entry from Countdowners, where deckers chronicle their final hours through statuses and photos via live feeds. This particular one about a college junior trying to find a home for his golden retriever. My chest tightens. I'm dying today. I've always been afraid of dying. I don't know why I thought this would jinx it from actually happening. Not forever, obviously, but long enough so I could grow up. Dad has been drilling it into my head that I should pretend I'm the main character of a story that nothing bad ever happens to, most especially death, because the hero has to be around to save the day. But the noise in my head is quieting down, and there's a Deathcast herald on the other end of the phone waiting to tell me I'm going to die today at 18 years old. Wow. I don't want to pick up the phone. I'd rather run into Dad's bedroom and curse into the pillow. The phone rings for what's got to be the 30th time, and I can't avoid it any more than I can avoid what's going down sometime today. I slide my laptop off my crossed legs and get up from my bed, swaying to the side, feeling really faint. I'm like a zombie moving toward my desk, slow and walking dead. The caller ID reads Deathcast, of course. I'm shaking but manage to press talk. I don't say anything. I'm not sure what to say. I just breathe because I have fewer than 28,000 breaths left in me, the average number of breaths a non-dying person takes per day. I might as well use them up while I can. Hello, I'm calling from Deathcast. I'm Andrea. You there, Timothy? Timothy. My name isn't Timothy. You've got the wrong person, I tell Andrea. My heart settles down, even though I feel for this Timothy person. I truly do. My name is Mateo. I got the name from my father, and he wants me to pass it down eventually. Now I can, if having a kid is a thing that happens for me. Computer keys are tapping on her end, probably correcting the entry or something in her database. Oh, apologies. Timothy is a gentleman I just got off the phone with. He didn't take the news very well, poor thing. You're Mateo Torres, right? And just like that, my last hope is obliterated. From They Both Die at the End by Adam Silvera. Today's book may, at first, sound like a throwback to those sad days in teen lit before Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall took center stage in film and the lives of teens cheered up in both books and films. But fear not, for today's book, They Both Die at the End, is, if not filled with happiness and cheer on every page, then at least an adventure worth taking with our lead character, the 18-year-old Mateo Torres, as he breaks through his adolescence anxieties on the last day of his life and bursts out into a Mateo both he and we end up cheering. You'll probably notice that the title includes the word both. So what of that other character, the one who joins Mateo on the story of this book? The other guy's name is Rufus, and he is 1 year younger, 17. When we meet him, Rufus has just found a family and friends to love at his new foster home, a place where he and his fellow buds have named Pluto, a loving substitute mother and father and a passel of siblings whose broken lives are being healed because they live together in their new foster home. Our story unfolds as the minutes of the guy's last days alive tick down, literally minutes. Starting from that first phone call very early in the morning from their herald announcing their last day on Earth. True to their natures, each responds in the first hour differently. Mateo quickly develops twin goals of reaching out to find a last friend through the appropriate app on his phone and cleaning up the apartment he shares with his hospitalized father so that his dad does not come home to a messy place. Rufus receives his call in the midst of a beatdown he's delivering to the snarky boyfriend of his recent ex-girlfriend. The young man being pummeled survives the beatdown in large part from Rufus's immediate realization after the doom-filled phone call, that he doesn't want his final hours on Earth to revolve around taking revenge for a lost love. For there is much more to Rufus than first meets our eyes. It is Rufus who breaks through Mateo's deeply held reticence to leave his bedroom. I think we could even suggest he was an agoraphobic kind of guy, thinking that perhaps he can survive the day if he doesn't expose himself to the world outside. Anyway, together the two lads marked for certain death embark on adventures that weave together their personal lives, spurred on by the fate that awaits them sometime in the next 24 hours, agreeing that though both are not going to survive and may not even go out together, they will support each other to their end moments on Earth nonetheless. The world Mateo and Rufus navigate on this last day is set in the gritty urban geography of a modern super city, I'm going to guess New York. Their means of transportation, of exploration and flight, runs the gamut from bikes to shoe leather, buses to subways, always surrounded by people, buildings, noise. This is not a bucolic day sitting in a sunny countryside. And those adventures, they thrill to simulated cliff diving, take a journey around the world in 80 minutes, and take Mateo to his first ever dance bar. It's open 24/7 to offer teenage and adult deckers a last few moments of release. This is a day jam-packed with adventures and thrills. A sympathetic society is set up for the deckers, as Mateo and Rufus are called. But there are quiet moments, too. Exploring a neighborhood park, they discover they both have a fondness for. It's a park visit that offers the two guys moments to share their deepest secrets and desires. Slowly at first, they had no idea who each other were before that app. But with the knowledge they really, really have limited time to live, they speed their sharing, their friendship, to pack in years into less than 24 hours. The modernity of the novel is striking. Yes, the central motivator is a kind of fear that we've seen since at least the 1960s, this fear of each individual's knowledge of imminent death. But it's a phone app that brings these two characters together early in our story. There's an app for that, taken to its logical extreme. And it's Rufus's familiarity with an extensive use of Twitter and Instagram in particular that brings our story to a crescendo moment. The two leads in our story are similar in their working-class background. Both are from broken families. Yet the two are very, very different in personality. As I said earlier, Mateo is the quiet one, verging on agoraphobic. It takes Rufus threatening to end their brand new friendship if he doesn't leave his bedroom on this, his last day of life. And it is Mateo who is anxious about leaving his beloved single father alone in the world after his death. Rufus, on the other hand, is raucous, hot-tempered, but as deep in his emotional attachments as Mateo is, as we discover, together they are quite a pair, an odd couple for this generation. And true to centuries-old experience, it is the horror of impending death that brings these two very different people together, reaching across their differences to bond in ways neither would have imagined on any other day, on this, their last day of life. You know, for a novel about imminent death, the mood of both the book and our lead characters swings from introspective to thrillingly fun. Mateo teaches Rufus about living for others, for realizing we are not the only or even the most important humans in the universe, through small acts of kindness offered to both his newfound friend and from reminiscences about Mateo's past. Rufus teaches Mateo that life without adventure is a pale reflection of reality, and that love can be expressed through big, dramatic actions as well as through small acts of kindness. As the story unfolds through the many pages of this novel, we catch glimpses of characters who the quiet Mateo or the loud Rufus have touched in their brief lives on Earth. We get to know and learn the backstories of folks like Lydia, Penny, Tago, Malcolm, and many more. For some of these characters, their experience with Mateo and or Rufus makes the world a better place, for at least the moment. And for a few, the world they live in is made worse. But always, the interchanges, whether glancing or deep, bring out these other characters' core personalities along the way. In the end, it surprised me that I was so engrossed in the story told in They Both Die in the End, knowing it will not end well for the characters I came to love as fictional friends. But the author's vision for the story he tells, The crisp, character-motivated action kept my eyes glued to these pages to the very end. I think it will do the same for you. And I want to end by reading not quite from the last pages, because I think we all know what happens then. I want to read at a little bit before we get to the end. We're at the dance club. Mateo has discovered that, hey, parties can be fun. And Mateo meets Rufus's gang from the Pluto house. It's quite an emotional moment. Rufus is speaking. I know I helped Mateo live his life, but he helped me get mine back in shape. I want to be remembered as who I am right now, not for that dumbass mistake I made. I turn, and Mateo and Lydia are standing shoulder to shoulder. I pull him over by the elbow. This is my last friend, Mateo, I say. And this is his number one, Lydia. Pluto shake hands with Mateo and Lydia. Solar systems are colliding. Are you scared? Amy asks us both. I grab Mateo's hand and nod. It'll be game over, but we won first. Thanks for taking care of our boy, Malcolm says. You're both honorary Plutos, Tego says. He turns to Malcolm and Amy. We should get badges made. I give the Plutos, my friends, a beat-by-beat play of my end day, and I fill them in on how color found its way to my Instagram. Elastic Heart by Sia comes to an end. We should be out there, right? Amy says, nodding toward the dance floor. Let's do this. Mateo says it before I can. It's a great way to end this review. It's a novel that is going to stick with me. It may well stick with you, too. These two characters in particular and the friends that they have and make on this last day of their lives. They both die at the end. It's a novel by Adam Silvera. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.